Hi, I'm David Crow. Thank you for tuning in to episode 184 of my weekly radio show, The Infectious Myth. Email me at david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com. That's Crow with an E. Join the discussion and like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Infectious Myth. Listen every Tuesday at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time on prn.fm, or download the MP3 after broadcast with iTunes or other podcast apps. You can listen to any of the last 5 episodes over the phone by dialing the U.S. number 701-719-0990 and following the instructions. Do remember that you will be responsible for any long-distance charges. Remember that I don't know you're a listener until I hear from you, so send me a message letting me know how you stay in touch with the show and what you like about it. If you include your mailing address, don't forget that, I will send you a little thank you gift, which will be one of the bookmarks I make by hand using my own photographs. If you would like to sponsor this show, please contact me. You can make a one-time donation via PayPal using the email david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com or make monthly donations at patreon.com/infectiousmyth. And Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. We appreciate all our listeners, but if you want this show to continue to grow and improve, consider paying a small amount for the information that you are gleaning, for the support you get for some non-mainstream ideas, and the challenges you get to others. If you would like me to speak at a meeting of an organization you're a member of on just about any of the topics I've covered in my shows, I'd be happy to discuss this with you. I appreciate you commenting and suggesting guests. I appreciate your financial support as well. Thank you for listening and also for recommending this show to your friends. I got some feedback from Mary via email. She wrote, "Thank you so much for your tireless efforts to arrive at the truth about viruses." She put viruses in quote marks, which I assume are ironic quotes. "I am keenly interested in the work of Stefan Lanka and in the theory of German New Medicine. I just re-listened to your 12th of April 2016 interview with Stefan Lanka. At the end of the interview, I thought Stefan was saying that autism is not on the rise because of vaccinations, but is simply one of the diseases that is explained by the theory of German New Medicine. Would you agree that that is what he seems to be saying? And will you be having him back on your show? I think he is the most qualified person to speak out about virus theory. But are there others besides him who also have comparable technical knowledge at present?" Well, let's address those questions briefly, and I will email back to Mary as well. I'm not a big fan of German New Medicine. I'm not saying that your emotional state can't cause disease, but it seems to be tautological to me is circular reasoning that everything is caused by your mental state, which is impossible to prove or disprove. However, I do believe that Stefan was saying that German New Medicine can explain the rise of autism, but people's psychological state hasn't changed that much since the middle of the 20th century when autism started to rise. I think the evidence that vaccinations are an important component is pretty compelling. Other virologists who I've talked to who are somewhat open-minded about viruses are Peter Duisberg and Etienne de Harven. I've had Peter on the show. Unfortunately, Etienne's hearing is no longer good enough to do an interview. But I will certainly consider any virologist who's open-minded enough to at least consider that some viruses are either not pathogenic or are not the cause of the disease they're blamed for or don't exist. Grace Jo Barn is a certified clinical hypnotherapist in private practice in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, for 20 years. She was trained in advanced hypnotherapy at a government-approved and regulated hypnotherapy institute in British Columbia, the Pacific Institute of Advanced Hypnotherapy. She has specialized in guiding people of all ages and backgrounds to self-healing from long-standing anxiety, depression, fears, low self-esteem, and self-sabotaging behaviors, including self-mutilation, substance abuse, and relationship-damaging control issues. She's been a very active human rights defender and was pitched into battle with the Ontario government when, in 2007, it secretly passed legislation that monopolized control of all mental health and wellness treatments in the hands of Big Pharma and its psychologists and psychiatrists. In particular, the legislation called the Control Act of Psychotherapy was worded to ensure that the almost 10,000 valued, proven, safe, and effective natural, holistic, spiritual care and traditional treatments operating in Ontario were to be eliminated, which included her. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Her practice website is graceplacewellness.ca, and I'll include that in the show notes. Welcome to the show, Grace.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yes. So let's talk about what is psychotherapy and what is, and we'll talk about licensed psychotherapy later, but what do you think psychotherapy is?
Well, actually, nobody knows what psychotherapy is. And the reason why they used the word psychotherapy and they made it into a profession is because nobody did know what that was, not even psychotherapists that could define it. They actually did a study before they passed this law. They actually did a study within the government. And the advisor said, well, you know, there's really no definition to it. There's no educational requirements. There's no core value. It's kind of like just talk therapy. And in fact, if you check all the psychology dictionaries, I think there are 12 prior to this all happening, you'll see that even in the psychology dictionaries, psychotherapy was defined as a psychological intervention that is just really talk therapy, and there was no standard or anything like that. So what better word to use to encompass all the therapies you could possibly want to eliminate by defining psychotherapy the way you want to define it, and then turn around and make a law that says, oh, you can't do psychotherapy unless we tell you that you can do it, unless you have a license, unless you do it the way we want to do it. So that's essentially what they did.
And what are the the approved modalities of treatment that would be encompassed by licensed psychotherapy?
None. What they've done, if after 10 years of this, holding this over our heads, what they've done is they've defined it into very broad categories. Okay. And let me first tell you what they did. They passed two laws in amendments to the Health Regulatory Act. Okay. The Health Professions Regulatory Act is supposed to be very minimally intrusive.
And this is Ontario. I just want to make that clear. And just for the context of our listeners who aren't all from Canada, Ontario is the largest and most populated province in Canada. So what happens in Ontario has huge influence on the rest of Canada.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so continue, sorry.
Yeah, so consequently, in 1990, and this affects all Americans as well, there was the Rio Accord. Our prime minister at the time was Mulroney, and he literally signed our country over in the Rio Accord, so that the New World Order could just kind of install itself as it wished, which meant there was going to be a monopoly over everything. So one of the monopolies has to be over hydro, another one has to be over healthcare, mental health care, and so on and so forth. So as soon as he signed that in 1991, a bunch of people got together, of course, handpicked by the pharmaceutical drug companies, and they set up a front organization called the Federation of Healthcare Regulatory Colleges, FHRCO. And its job was to then influence the Minister of Health, which apparently it wasn't very difficult to do. And when they wanted to eliminate a certain group of people or certain therapies or approaches, what they do is they get the minister to install a new college and install legislation. So one of the two pieces of legislation that they needed in order to get rid of all natural therapies was the Psychotherapy Act to establish psychotherapy, in other words, carve it out from psychology and create a separate profession. So they did that. That created the Psychotherapy Act, which they could never define psychotherapy for 10 mm-hmm. years. Then they turned around and made a controlled act of psychotherapy. Now, controlled acts are very, very serious things, because what they're doing is they're controlling who can provide that particular service. Okay, so by the time that this FHRCO was complete, was done over 10 years, they had created 26 colleges. Okay, mm-hmm. 26 colleges, imagine. There's just absolutely nothing you can do that some college is not going to, force you to buy a license for.
Now, what are some of the other colleges apart from psychotherapy? Like, what kinds of areas do they cover? Do the naturopaths have a college? The chiropractors?
Naturopaths are now licensed. Acupuncture, Chinese traditional medicine. Well, of course, you've got your dental, you've got your x-ray technicians, so on and so forth. Yes, there's some that we will agree. There's no doubt about it. You have to regulate them. That was only five or six of them. But what they wanted to do is they installed, we call them shills, into each of the therapies that they wanted to eventually eliminate through license. And those people ended up at the very top of their groups, like, for example, naturopathy. And first thing you know, they're agreeing to be licensed. Well, if you look at naturopathy in Ontario now, you can't distinguish them from medical doctors because they're pushing drugs and they're only supposed to talk very positively about vaccines. And many, many people are reporting to us that they're just disgusted. They go to a naturopath because they're expecting natural treatments, and all of a sudden they're being pushed towards vaccines and so on and so forth. So the naturopathic industry is pretty much kaputs in Ontario as a result. But they didn't want any natural approaches, whatever. Hypnotherapy, Reiki, any of that kind of thing. Spiritual care has to be completely licensed now, and so on and so forth. So what they did in 2007, despite the government's own advisors saying that the Controlled Act of Psychotherapy would be completely incoherent and unworkable, they still passed it into law in 2007. Now,
okay.
Don't forget, just because it's passed into law, it has to be proclaimed into enforcement.
Okay.
Okay, so those are two separate moves.
Right.
So after we learned about this controlled act of psychotherapy, and of course it starts off with first carving out a profession that you can define it as you wish. The controlled act of psychotherapy reads like this: treating by means of psychotherapy technique delivered through a therapeutic relationship an individual's serious disorder of thought, cognition, mood, emotional regulation, perception, or memory that may seriously impair the individual's judgment, insight, behavior, communication, or social functioning. That makes just about every single human action, reaction, and
right.
human under their thumb. So you ask, oh, well, what's psychotherapy technique? See, they're very, very clever, because a lot of people looked at this, just as we expected and they expected, looked at this and went, oh, okay, well, I don't do psychotherapy. Oh, that's great. You know,
right.
A Reiki practitioner looked at this and said, oh, we don't do psychotherapy. This doesn't apply to us. But we kept reinforcing for the fact that they've never defined psychotherapy and psychotherapeutic technique. They've never defined serious disorder. And not only that, but where's the evidence that psychotherapists, psychologists, or psychiatrists are the most effective at providing help for those with a serious disorder?
Okay, so I have a few questions before we get too much further. So what's your understanding of the difference between, like, I thought psychiatrists can prescribe drugs. So you go into a psychiatrist, you get diagnosed with bipolar or whatever, they give you a prescription. That's pretty simple. I'm not sure it's very effective. In fact, it could be very dangerous, I think. But
well,
psychology
be very dangerous.
Well, what's that?
Say that.
Yes. Well, with drugs that can make your symptoms worse, that can create other symptoms, things like that. So, but at least psychiatry is understandable. It's basically linked to prescriptions. Psychologists at present can't prescribe. So, isn't that talk therapy? What's the difference between psychology and psychotherapy?
Well, there isn't any. You see, that's why they carved it out, because psychotherapy really was nothing. It's just, you know, you could call yourself a psychotherapist because you're talking to me. Let's say, oh, you know, I'm really riled about this and you're going to calm me down. Well, you're engaged in psychotherapy. So psychotherapy was a psychological intervention. Now, I think there are about 245 psychological theories, okay? There is no theory that has ever been proven, psychological theory that has ever
right.
been proven to work at all, let alone for most people. And that was raised by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeal in Texas, where a woman actually took the Psychological Association to court because they tried to stop her from providing psychological treatments, which are just
right.
therapy and so on and so forth. And the court said, you know, you can't interfere with human to human interaction, whether it's for the purpose of health and wellness. Psychology is simply an opinion, somebody's opinion, and you can't be forcing other people to abide by your opinion, and you can't be forcing other people not to interact with other people that want to interact with them by consent. So, you know, psychology was kind of dead in the water as far as trying to force a controlled act of psychology, right? It wasn't going to work. So what they did is they carved out psychotherapy, which was not defined, out of psychology.
Okay.
And then they established a profession to be defined as they wish. So when they set about putting the controlled act of psychotherapy, they knew it was unworkable. They knew that it was going to be incoherent, but that was okay, because what that meant is that they would have 10 or 12 years to be able to start forcing it on the public, reinforcing that, oh, you have to have a license and you have to have this, and we're going to tell you what it
is. Okay. So let me just take an example. You talked about Reiki. So let's say that the people in charge of this college of psychotherapy, they say, okay, we want to get on top of Reiki. So they're going to come up with educational standards and licensing standards. Like, what would they do to grab control?
What they decided to do, because all you have to do then is change the word from Reiki to spiritual care or to energy care. And they knew that was going to happen. People would just deke around.
Right. Okay.
So they wanted to capture everything, spiritual care, Reiki, any body mind therapies of any kind, hypnotherapy, name it. Okay, there were approximately 125 different approaches operating in Ontario that people very much valued, and you knew that they valued them because they pay out of pocket for them.
Right.
Everybody pays out of pocket for something, and that something keeps increasing in popularity, you know it has to be effective. So being competition to the pharmaceutical drug companies, they had to corral everybody, you know, find a way to get everybody corralled into one definition so that they could control everybody who fits into that definition. So here's the definition. The following are the categories of prescribed therapies involving the practice of psychotherapy: cognitive and behavioral therapies, experiential and humanistic therapies, psychodynamic therapies, somatic therapies, which is mind-body therapies, systemic and collaborative therapies. Now, can you think of any possible way that you could talk to another human being, even a grandmother to their granddaughter, give them a device, and help them that they would not fall into one of those?
So let's say years ago, I was a Boy Scout leader. So I'm a Boy Scout leader, and I recognize that, you know, some of my boys have psychological troubles that probably come from their family environment or other things. So I decide that it's going to be really good to take them out camping into the wilderness, into a different environment, that this will help their personality grow, that it will help change them into better people. That would be psychotherapy, right?
Well, according to this, you're falling into one of those categories because you're dealing with their cognition and their behavior, aren't you?
I think that was,
you're collaborating with them too.
Oh my God, I'm going to jail. I think those youth groups all claim to develop better people.
That's right.
So they're definitely in the realm of a kind of therapy. You're sending your child to these organizations because you hope that it will help them develop better as a human being, and that when they grow up, you'll be able to look back and say, you know, when they were in gymnastics or when they were in Boy Scouts or Girl Guides or whatever group it was, that really helped them with some of their personality issues that they had when they were 12 or 14.
Look at all the people who go to meditation. They learn meditation. Well, that particular instructor is engaged in somatic therapy. What they're doing is they're teaching another human being how to use their body and their mind in order to deal with stress and so on and so forth. And it's collaborative because they're talking it over, they're working out a plan and so on and so forth. Same thing with yoga, same thing with hypnotherapy.
Well, so fitness, a fitness instructor, like I have a bad, bad self-image because I'm out of shape. So I'm going to go to a fitness instructor to improve my self-image. And I mean, part of the fitness instructor is to encourage you and to, you know, to try to, you know, develop your self-discipline and things like that. I mean, they're also therapists. But what about religious leaders? Like you talked about spiritual therapies. What happens if you go to your priest to talk about some issues you have?
They've already dealt with that. We had a gentleman who for 30 years has been a prison services chaplain and offering spiritual advice and care to prison inmates and so on and so forth. And you know, had a very excellent practice. And so he decided, well, rather than me be out of work after all these years and having to fight the government and, you know, be charged with a fine, then I have to hire a lawyer and, you know, spend all my money on a lawyer to fight this statute. He said, I'll just join. Okay, so he just joined. He decided to just join. Well, you wouldn't believe the nonsense they put him through for 2 years. First of all, they told him that he would have to, in writing, okay, admit that everything he's ever taught and his beliefs that he has ever shared, okay, were unethical and that he would never do it again. That he would only share what the college agrees that he should share. The other thing he had to do was in writing a dissociate from three Christian organizations that the college didn't like. Now I want to clarify something about the colleges. Colleges is a fancy word, okay, for a profit-driven corporation. It does not have anything to do with education. It is tyrannical, and they extort fees from hardworking practitioners of every kind. And this is done in the trades. They set up the trades exactly using the same template. Okay.
Right. I mean, let's use this as a model. Like if I'm a naive person, I'm going to say, okay, well, I'm happy that there is, you know, there's maybe a trade association for plumbers because, you know, I want a certain standard when somebody comes in to do plumbing. I want some confidence that they know what they're doing. And I think plumbing, we can agree, is pretty well defined. There's certain types of pipes. There's you know, plumbing's used for certain things. If you're trained in plumbing, you get to be taught about all the different things that are connected to plumbing.
The mistake that you're making is what everybody mistakes. Mm-hmm. That licensing is equivalent to competency when it's not. What we should all have when we provide a service is proof that we're competent. A license does not prove you're competent. All you have to do is look at the horrors of medical doctors right now. They have a license to practice, and many of them are totally incompetent, okay? And that they've self-admitted this. So people are indoctrinated to believe that if something is licensed, you have to be licensed, then whoa, you can rely on this. And this is not remotely the case. Licensing has nothing to do with anything except creating revenue for the corporation that runs our country.
And there's this whole concept of kind of the state of the art, because if this college says you must do this in a certain way, then pretty much you have to do that. I remember listening to an American doctor who I think was Obama's physician or something. So it was a fairly high profile doctor. And he was talking about PSA tests for prostate cancer. And it's well recognized that those tests are dangerous because they increase the number of useless interventions. And I think even the inventor of the PSA test basically said this is gotten out of control.
Yeah, like mammograms.
Yes, mammograms, PSAs. I've had people on the show talking about, I think Peter Gotchi talking about mammograms. But he said, I gave PSAs because if I don't give a PSA and the guy gets prostate cancer and it turns out that I didn't recommend the PSA, I'm screwed, right? Because I didn't follow state of the art. But if I give a PSA, and he didn't say this, but if he gives a PSA and there's a biopsy because of the PSA result and the man becomes incontinent and impotent, then there's no punishment because it was state of the art.
That's
so
right.
You can harm people as long as you're following the rules.
Well, the presumption is that a PSA test is going to prevent prostate issues. When it's not the case at all, what is going to, you don't need a PSA test. You need a proper diet and proper lifestyle and your prostate will be just fine. Okay. So, but they're trying to make you believe that if you have a test, these tests, then you're going to ward off all these problems, even if you don't change your lifestyle.
Yes.
The bottom line is, you know, we have to be able to let everyone do what they want to do. If they want to go the conventional route to all of this, fine. But the problem is that there are tens of millions of people now that have seen the light and they don't want to have anything to do with psychology, psychiatry, psychotherapy, because it just hasn't been proven or proven itself in any way, shape or form to be better than going back to the basics and learning how to interact with one another. Learning how to be positive, learning, you know, collaborative methods of building a society together, a group, and a community. So they have to eliminate that because they're eliminating themselves. They're so utterly useless at helping. You look at the mental health industry today, it's humongous. We never had kinds of problems. People, humans lived through great wars, great depressions, name it, and they bounced back and raised their families and built their communities and their businesses. And now we have children that can't get through school because of the so-called mental health industry that they've designed to make it impossible to get out, out of a wet paper bag if you have to.
Right, and not dealing with the fundamental problems of our modern society, such as the diet, the fact that my mother always had a good saying. She said that children need to be bored. Children are not bored anymore. They can play video games. They can watch television. They can be stimulated without any effort on their part all the time. And therefore, if a child sits in a classroom and starts to get bored, they start to act out because they've never had the experience of sitting by themselves, you know, by a creek or under a tree or with a book or something, because so many children don't have those experiences of actually, you know, amusing themselves for an hour or two.
They're not allowed to use their imagination. They're not even allowed to admit they have an imagination. They're not allowed to be curious or adventurous or try things on their own, you know. But there's a reason for that, is because if you disempower people, you can do anything to them. You can keep them enslaved forever. I mean, there's a bigger picture to why this kind of thing has happened. But at the end of the day, what they're saying is that no one can help anyone else with any kind of interactive relationship that's going to help them with their health and wellness. You cannot go back to basics. What they're doing with this is they're taking all the things that are required to use basic human interaction to repair or to help somebody up, you know, from where they are. And so what they're doing is they're taking all of these categories and making sure that no one else can offer them, but then they don't offer them either. Psychiatrists offer pills, psychologists offer talk, and psychotherapists, I have no idea what they're going to offer. But at the end of the day, tell me, if this is lawful in a democratic and free society that Canada claims to be, that I can't talk to you, I can't offer you my services. If you come to me and you say, you know, you really helped my sister or you really helped my friend and I really want you to help me, and I have to say, well, the caller says that I can't.
So I don't think I asked you about religious, like the priest. So explain to me how that's going to work with the psychotherapy college. Is a priest immune, or does a priest need to be licensed in order to offer
it? Everyone who's going to offer any kind of therapy to another human being in Ontario has to be licensed with the college. And here's what the college allows. Okay. It allows only what it has decided will be proper training. So they've got their little, what would you call it? Their favorites. Okay. So some psychotherapist opened a clinic or opened a training school, and these psychotherapists have spirit washed their courses. So now they're talking about spiritual courses, and they're talking about, various psychological theories. They're pushing all kinds of psychological theories now. Okay, so you can see that it's psychology with a different name, okay,
right,
brand, as opposed to being something that is actually going to help people in a different way. So there are all kinds of therapies that they're Gestalt. You might have heard of Gestalt therapy.
Yeah, and I don't know anything about it.
Well, nobody hardly does, because it really wasn't very valuable, and it just kind of died a natural death like psychotherapy. And I might add too, I'm not saying this just out of midair because of how I feel about this. There are actually academic papers written about the death of psychotherapy and all of these other types of psychological interventions, and how they're probably never going to be revived, except that the authors of those academic papers didn't know about in Ontario they could revive the dead.
Whenever I read an American novel, it always seemed to be set in New York, and it was always neurotic people who all had a psychotherapist who was either Freudian or Jungian.
Yeah.
Right? And
there.
So I learned a couple of things from that. It's like, first of all, people believed that these therapies worked, but then the fact that people would say, I have a therapist, kind of implied to me that this was a long-term relationship. And so it seemed to me that the therapist couldn't be doing that much if you're still neurotic after 20 years of seeing your therapist, and maybe the therapist isn't really helping too much.
You see, at the end of the day, you'll have people that'll swear up and down they really love their therapist. Well, yeah, because they've gone past therapy. They've gone, this is their friend. They go every week to see their friend. That's mm-hmm. what, but that's not therapy. And if these people were ethical, after 4 or 5 sessions, the therapist would say, you know what, I'm not really able to help you enough. Let me help you find a different therapy that's going to help you. But what they're doing is they're eliminating all the different therapies. So they can't say to you, Dave, you're not allowed to talk to Grace, and you're not allowed to discuss hypnotherapy with her. You'd say, wait a minute. But what do? They eliminate me. So
right. So then I don't have the choice.
Anybody. Exactly. The fact that we should be protected, that we should be encouraged, and that we should be supported by OHIP and so on and so forth is in the fact that people are willing to pay out of pocket for our services, and that according to the Fraser Institute, they did a study in 2005, 2006, just before they passed this law. And they said that natural therapies are coming back. There are no complaints about them at all, except for the fact that people have to pay for them out of pocket. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the use of natural therapies is growing, is doubling every 10 years. Mm-hmm. Every 10 years. So we should be now looking at eliminating these other three problems and bolstering the availability of natural therapies, human therapies.
Yes. I think the harms of psychiatry, and that doesn't mean that psychiatry's never helped anybody, but putting people on these powerful drugs, you know, it's kind of notable that whenever there is a mass shooting or something, there's a very good chance that they will say that this person was struggling with depression or you know, was diagnosed with some other psychiatric illness, which is basically saying that they were probably on some powerful psychiatric drugs, and drugs that when you quit them have severe withdrawal effects, which can exacerbate your symptoms. So, I mean, even if you go away from psychotherapy, in the United States, it was estimated in a journal, American Medical Association, that in 1998, properly prescribed pharmaceutical drugs killed 106,000 people, 106,000 Americans in 1998 alone. That's 100,000. Like, you might be able to find a handful of people who've been killed by natural therapies, but there's no way you're going to find 106,000 a year. Now, of course, in Canada, that'd be like 10,000 based on the population difference.
I want to correct you on that. So, they haven't ever been able to find one person that's ever been killed or harmed or even complained about natural therapies. Now, there have been complaints about having to pay out of pocket.
Right.
And complaints that, you know, the therapist wasn't nice to the patient and so, or the client and so on and so forth, but you never had anybody that was hurt by natural therapies. we just don't come at it that way. That's the thing, is it's totally self-healing. When people come to somebody for natural therapies, they're coming to heal themselves, and the other person is just the guide.
That's natural it. Psychological therapies. Naturals. I don't know what you want to call them.
Emotional, spiritual. Mm-hmm. Most of our problems in life are psycho-spiritual, meaning, you know, we've lost our way. We've lost our connection with humanity. We've lost our connection with our community, because our community has been dissolved, our families, and so on and so forth. We've lost our way. And so that's what natural therapies are about. So what they did is, instead of naming them, and we warned everybody for 5 years, we worked really hard to warn everybody how they had changed the psychology dictionaries. And now psychotherapy was defined as about 105 or maybe more therapies, all by name: art therapy, animal therapy, active listening, hypnotherapy, name it. I mean, you couldn't think of one single thing that a human being does with another that would not be psychotherapy.
Well, let's take art therapy or music therapy. Like, it seems to me the worst thing that could happen with those therapies is nothing.
Like, you've got it exactly. Right?
Yeah, I mean, if you do art therapy and it's either the person you're working with or your techniques mean that nothing happens, that's about the worst thing. It would be hard to see art therapy resulting in somebody. I guess if you wanted to write a novel, you could think of some devious art therapist who really wanted to bend the mind of somebody. But these therapies seem at worst innocuous. And I was just reading. I mean, I'm not expert on music therapy, but I've heard, you know, the power of music. Like in one case, at an old folks' home, they gave them MP3 players. Mm-hmm. And they put their favorite music on it, and they noticed a huge improvement in the mental state of these people, because they were listening to music they'd listened to maybe 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. And that improved their mental state. It would be hard. I guess there are examples of music being used to harm people, such as in Guantanamo, where they play horrible music 24 hours a day with a light on. So I guess you could harm people if you wanted, but that's kind of a bit of a stretch. It's not like,
at the end of the day, if that person agrees that they would like to listen to this music after being it's suggested to them, then that's between those two people. And the government is saying is that you can't even offer this music. You can't even help the person choose it unless you're licensed with the college and that the college agrees with the music that you're going to suggest.
Okay. And educational institutions must love this, because you know they're going to make a lot of money off people who say, okay, I might feel like I'm prepared to offer this therapy, but I can't actually do it legally unless I go to school. Even if my training is useless, I still have to pay for the education. And then I have to pay every year to the college to maintain my licensing.
Well, the thing is that they've already told us that there's a video on a montage of the college discussing who's going to be allowed in and who's not going to be allowed in. And they already said energy type therapies and Reiki and so on and so forth. They don't know anything about them, and they're not likely to allow anybody in. Well, even if you do get licensed, why do you want to give up everything that you've learned? And in my case, I had a really successful practice. I was trained at a government approved and regulated college, institute rather, in BC. Why do I have to pay my hard-earned money to a college that knows nothing about me, and they've already said they don't really respect what I do? I don't exist in their world. Okay, so they're
not. So, what is your personal situation with hypnotherapy? Like, how has this impacted your practice as a hypnotherapist?
Well, so far they haven't fined me or anything, because they're just getting permission now to start attacking. Once they get this passed, the rest of this, after I've read it to you, what the categories are, this just came out in April. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then they were supposed to allow for a 60-day consultation process, but they, of course, haven't allowed 60 days. Okay. It was the same way with, this was proclaimed into enforcement by the college at Christmas when no one was paying attention.
Okay? Right.
mm-hmm. get anybody's attention, but it doesn't matter because we had sent so many letters. We had broken down for the minister all of the human rights violations that he was engaged in and so on and so forth. That should have been enough. That should have closed it down. We sent it to the attorney general. The attorney general's job is to make sure that no human rights violation occur with any legislation that's proposed.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Never even got an answer. And we spent a lot of time and a lot of money digging this all up. But these are major, major human rights violations. When you're telling consenting adults who to talk to, what services to offer, and it's a human rights violation to interfere with somebody offering their advice, therapy, services, and so on and so forth.
So this College of Psychotherapy, it's not really in full operation yet? I mean, has it?
Oh, no, it is in full operation.
Yeah. And, yes. And it shut down some people who they didn't like or didn't want to play ball?
What they're doing right now is they're rounding out their enforcement policy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that they can come in and say, Grace, you're involved in mind-body therapies. That's somatic. You're collaborating with other people for their purposes of health and wellness. Well, many of the people I see have already been through the psychiatry, psychology, psychotherapy routine.
Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm.
They want something else. They know they're getting worse and worse and worse, particularly parents with teachers, because the latest Canadian study, I think it was 3 years ago, show of 17,000 kids who had been put on these psychiatric drugs and gone through the mill, the conventional mill, not one of them improved. Most of them got worse, and some of them committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them didn't even finish school or couldn't get a job. So this study was suppressed, just like the Fraser Institute studies about how great natural therapies were and that people wanted to go back to the basics. That was all suppressed. That was considered, they didn't even consider it.
It seems to me that there is a division, sort of a political division. If you take the left-right division, the people on the left like to think of themselves as progressive and scientific. And they kind of buy into mainstream therapies because they say these people are educated, because it's based on science. As you pointed out, it's like with psychiatric and psychological disorders and treatments, there's really no possibility of proof. But that allows a fairly large number of people to say, we're going to support this attempt to make these things more professional. And it seems like support for these therapies tends to come from the right end of the political spectrum, where people are more interested in individual liberties. But sometimes it gets caught up into this, well, it's all anti-scientific. But actually, if you know the science, if you read some of the science of psychology, psychiatry, and other areas of medicine, there's some pretty shocking stuff in there that's published in mainstream medical journals.
Well, at the end of the day, the point is that individual freedoms and a free society means that you get to choose who you want to interact with, who you want to associate with, and we have medical autonomy has been upheld by the Supreme Court over and over and over again. Well, yes, you have medical autonomy, but if there's nobody there to provide you with what you'd like to try for your own health and wellness, then you know, there goes your medical autonomy, right? At the end of the day, everyone should be able to go to a conventional treatment professional if they want it. No problem at all. Anyone should be able to pay all of their money, hard-earned money, to a college if they want to. But the people who do not agree with it should not be forced. They cannot be forced in law. That's what the International Covenants of Civil and Political Rights and this International Covenant of Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights is about. And that's why those human rights were so thoroughly suppressed and kept from us. They spent billions of dollars making sure we never hear about our human rights, because otherwise you'd look at them, they're written in plain English for the individual, and you'd go, hey, wait a minute, they can't do this. They can't force me to dispose of my resources, my financial resources, to associate with a college that I don't even agree with, that I don't even need, that will do nothing for me and nothing for the public except to disillusion the public.
Yes. There's an election happening right now in Ontario. There is the old tired Liberal Party that's been mired in a number of corruption scandals. There's Doug Ford, who's kind of got similarities to Donald Trump. And then there's the NDP as the three major parties. There's also the Green Party. I don't know if there's any others. Is there any political interest in this situation in Ontario? Like, are any of the parties saying that they'll reverse any of this or change it?
No, well, the thing is that every letter we've ever sent and so on and so forth just dies right on the books. All of a sudden, you're just a nobody. They, as a matter of fact, when they talk about stakeholders, they leave out the public and they leave out the 10,000 people that are being thrown out of work. We're not even stakeholders. That's how much contempt they have for anybody and anything that would interfere with the pharmaceutical takeover of all of healthcare. So we've been trying very, very hard to get mainstream media involved, never hear a thing back. We wrote to one of the biggest health magazines in Ontario. It's called Vitality. And I just listened to their short answer about dismissing us out of hand, okay? We were called as Stop Psychotherapy Takeover. So if anyone wants to get the real lowdown on what's happened to Ontario and which is happening to Nova Scotia now too, because Ontario is just a template. What works in Ontario is taken right across Canada, as you mentioned. But it's www.stoppsychotherapytakeover.ca. And you're going to see just how serious this is because you're being told who you can talk to. And when you're sick and you know that you're getting sicker because of a certain treatment and you can't find the person you need, you're in big trouble. So I suggest to people don't wait till they're sick. But in any case, this is what the Julia Woodford, the editor of Vitality magazine, told us on April 26, 2014, when we were trying to get the word out. We could see the fire. We're yelling, we're trying to get these people to spend some time, look at this. This is really serious. Okay? So she writes back, "We understand your concerns, and of course, we have a lot at stake too, due to the high number of therapists who advertise in Vitality. That said, the people I have communicated with at the college assure me that any legislative amendment is intended solely to govern the usage of the word psychotherapy, not any other type of counseling. For the moment, I am satisfied with this. If it turns out that the college was misrepresenting their intentions, which places the livelihoods of other counselors and therapists at risk, then and only then will Vitality intervene and get involved in lobbying the government and informing the public. In the meantime, we respect the college's stated intention of dealing only with the usage of the word psychotherapy and psychotherapist in regards to the professional standards associated with it, and that it does not affect any other healing professions or therapies." And 3 years later, actually 4 years later, I just read to you everything that it involves, which is
Which is basically
interaction.
the whole scope of the whole scope of human interconnections.
Yeah, but do you know why that was so awful and hurtful? Is because she wanted to charge us. We were working on a shoestring out of our own pocket after working all day trying to warn everybody, and but she wouldn't even give us a page so that we could educate the public. We had to pay for it. And so there were a couple of magazines like Tone Magazine in Eastern Ontario, very supportive, gave us the space that we needed to get the word out and so on and so forth. But there's the kind of thing that we were against. She called the college. What did the college do? The college just downplayed everything that we were trying to warn about. Why did they change the psychology dictionary? All she had to do was ask that. The definition of psychotherapy in the new psychology dictionary, and it includes this whole range of all kinds of therapies. How can you say that the college is being truthful in? And yeah, so that we had a very, very, very hard time because there's an element in government that is absolutely pro New World Order, and that is their focus, is to get everything monopolized.
Well, yeah, and like I say, I think this is sort of the downside of progressivism is how can a minister of a government who knows nothing about healthcare, who's been put in charge, disagree with more education and licensing standards? I mean, the reality is that these colleges, and as you said, some of them are necessary, like for surgeons and things like that.
Yes.
That often when there's a problem with a surgeon, say sexual abuse or incompetence or something like that, their job is to cover it up more than it is
You've got it. You hit the nail on the head, which makes it absolutely unconscionable that they force decent human beings who work in natural health care to be associated with a college because it does nothing for the public.
We just have a couple of minutes left. You have a complaint or some kind of legal filing. I mean, what is your current, what are your current efforts focused on in changing the direction of Ontario health policy?
Well, when you say, well, you can't change the direction of healthcare policy because one of the things that we started to investigate, we joined up with a group called people-united.ca and we're ferreting out all of the rot. Okay, and we're putting it on a website, and it's not just about healthcare. Healthcare is just a touch, the tip of the iceberg, honest to God. All our properties in Ontario, and I believe right across Canada, but in Ontario, were actually downgraded in title. So instead, for example, of people having absolute title when they pay in fee simple, when they buy their property, they're actually relegated to qualified title without their knowledge or consent. And this was all done at the same time as all this other health care and all this monopolization was done. So that's a whole new, that's a whole different subject, but it's pretty horrific. And so we're joining with other groups and teaching people about their true human rights and how all of these types of things violate our human rights. We had a, we could have taken this to the courts, okay? But the government has installed a couple of, or it appears that it has installed a couple of frontline judges that do nothing but strike claims. Doesn't matter how meritorious your claim is, they will just strike it. We had one judge who struck a claim, a statement of claim, stating that he, no one could stretch their imagination far enough to read the piece of legislation the way it was written. Said that twice. So now your rights are based on how far a judge can stretch their imagination. So
right.
The rule of law has pretty much disappeared. With that, we found with People-United, our investigations of 5 years have shown us this. And so it, what you have to do is educate the public as to what they had, what their
when therapists. Start. I mean, it might get to the point where when therapists start shutting down because the college
already have.
Right, but I would imagine that at that point people would take more notice. Like, why can't I go to my therapist anymore? Or do you think they're all just gonna go line up and go to a psychologist instead of a hypnotherapist or instead of Reiki or one of the other modalities?
Well, the thing is that the government now is imposing its views. So if somebody, if your relative says, "Whoa, I think, you know, Dave has got some cognitive issues and everything," they can actually force you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're pulling driver's licenses now because people are turning 60 and 65. Now they've attached driving and your competency to drive to your age. That's true age discrimination. And what they've done is they've turned driver's licenses over. And actually in Alberta as well, this has happened.
Well, my mother lives in Ontario and she's 90 and she has to go in, I think, every so often, maybe, I don't think it's once a year, but it's something like that. And she has to have her eyesight tested, which I certainly don't have a problem with and she doesn't either. But she still has her license at 90.
Well, she's really lucky and she's really one of the rare ones. There are people 60 and 65 who have a stellar driving record. And this is by the thousands. There are over 10,000 people in Alberta alone that have lost their driver's license for no reason other than they were forced to take, they were forced to take a cognitive test that is fraudulent. It was proven to be useless and fraudulent right across the world by ethical researchers.
Right.
And people are forced to take these cognitive tests. And this, these tests were brought to Ontario. The name was changed, okay, and it was forced on people. Now, the only purpose for it is money, okay? Because all driver's licenses have been taken over. In Ontario, they were sold. The control of them were sold to a company called Serco. Serco is a huge, if not one of the largest, scandal-ridden multinational corporations across the world.
Well, I was talking about the Liberal government in Ontario and scandals. I didn't know about this one, but yeah, privatization. The Liberal government also privatized Ontario Hydro. And I think the Liberal government in Ottawa is sort of similar, is this sort of this idea that if you privatize things, they're always better. But if they go to a corrupt corporation that whose only asset is really their connections with top politicians, it's not going to be better.
Well, privatization is just a fancy word for a corporation divesting its business. That's all it is. Where people go wrong is they think that if they talk about the government, they're talking about something separate from a profiteering corporation. But they're not. What we are, the de facto authority in Canada and in the provinces, are actually corporations, profiteering corporations. That's why Trudeau always talks about how quickly they can make profit from the marijuana legislation. That's a violation of our human rights to tell people they can't use something grown in nature. Think about
that. Well, that's a whole other issue. I would say that it's better than criminalization of marijuana. But I agree that if there's a plant that we can grow and it's not hurting anybody, we should just be able to grow it. But I would certainly rather be paying for legal marijuana than having it illegal and criminalized, and having young children, you know, kids going to jail for decades because they got caught with a bag of marijuana.
I wonder how we survived for thousands and thousands and thousands of years without the government yeah. managing our natural plants. Gee, I don't know.
But I agree with you.
It's just a fancy word like psychotherapy, and what it does is it distracts you from the fact that our public assets have been doled out to various multinational corporations
right.
as they wish. And so the shell of a government that we have left, all they do is they sign on the dotted line. So when Circle wants an increase in fees, which happens every single year, okay,
you get it.
The minister just signs off. When Big Pharma wants another college so that they can regulate a whole group of people right out of business, the ministers just sign right on the dotted line. That's
okay.
What privatization is about. And every area of Ontario has been privatized, every single one of our assets.
Yes, I agree that that's a trend, and I'm certainly not approving of it. We've come to the end of our time. I would just like to thank you for joining me today, and I will share the MP3 with you when it is posted in a week or so.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
Okay, and goodbye.
Okay. Bye-bye, Dave.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to episode 184 of The Infectious Myth. If you have a comment, question, or suggestion for a future guest, please email me at david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com, like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth, follow us on Twitter and Instagram @infectiousmyth, commit to monthly donations of any amount at patreon.com/infectiousmyth. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.